Welcome back to Third Coast Podcast.
Hey.
Holy shit. Too loud.
Already ruining the listeners' ears. The one thing I didn't check right off the bat. Welcome back. We are live in effect and get it on and popping. What's up, Alric?
What's up, man? Dude, happy to be here. Happy to be hanging out for a couple days. It's pretty nice.
You made the nice journey from New Orleans.
Oh yeah, it took an extra hour yesterday, but it was well worth it. I got here last night like 7:30, set up, been hanging out and doing some writing and just like reading a bunch of books and stuff and just kind of hanging out and stuff. So it's been nice to be. I haven't been back here in like a year and a half, I think. So it's good to just be on that property and be on the grounds and be like, it still just feels like home. It's the craziest thing. It's like I feel just as at home there than I do anywhere else, if not more. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, the void definitely is a magical fucking place, to say the least. And I want to bring up, it's because I live here, you know.
Yeah.
And when I hear you say that Oakdale is a magical place, it's like, man, I live here and go through these same red lights all the time, you know. And I do see it as kind of magical, I guess you would say. It's my hometown, but I don't, you know, like you escape big city life to come down here and get a peace of mind and stuff. And
I think that's what it is too. I think it's not my daily regimen. So having that change of environment or change of just like, all right, cool, I'm out of the city. And especially once you're in that property, when you're in the actual grounds itself, it's everything's built up around it and there's trees all around it. So you do feel like you're not right there. You know what I mean? Like you're right on the edge of Oakdale, but it doesn't feel like that. It's kind of that illusion of like, there's enough woods between here and the highway that you don't really feel like you're anywhere close. And then especially once you go to the farther back, it's like, oh yeah. All right.
Yeah.
And being there right now, like being there and it's just like me hanging out and doing stuff. It's like, it's so funny to me because I feel like it's like there should be a mild, like, spooky undertone in this building that doesn't have that many lights on and I'm there by myself, but it just doesn't. You can just tell that there's so much, like, love and positive energy there that it's like, I'm not even afraid. And I'm, like, a person that kind of, like, in like, quote-unquote spooky instances, it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It makes me feel a little on edge, but then it was like, Not here. It's crazy.
Well, that means you get to explore some of the new stuff out there that they built.
Yeah.
That you ain't saw. Like, well, I mean, it ain't in full effect right now, but
it was
like
crazy to see
and stuff.
The skitter area. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's all grass, and it's so green and lush out there. And I was like walking through, and I just looked. And at that point, it was all still sand, and everything had just kind of been removed from that area the last time that I'd been here. And it was still, there were patches of grass, but now it's just full and lush. And it's amazing. Everything that they've added to Avon's too looks really good. And everything's just, it's beautiful to see it come together on like another level every time that I come back here. And it was, you know, I spent a good amount of time there in that 1 year. I think it was like 4 or 5 weeks. Oh, excuse me. But then to have that little break and then come back and be like, oh, this entity is its own being that just continuously ebbs and flows and grows constantly. And it's a unique thing to see, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So when you come, you had told me that you were coming down not only for like a peace of mind, but to get into some writing.
Yeah.
So how does the void and your writing process intertwine itself together?
I think that it's because it's a place, especially right now, where it's a place of solitude and a place of, it's quiet. You know, it's very quiet, and I live kind of a busy, hectic, hustle and bustle life, and to be able to come here and just kind of gather everything beforehand. I knew I wanted to do like some reading and some research I gathered everything beforehand, and then as soon as I got here, it's a wild thing to try to explain, but there's this just wave of relief. Like, as soon as I park in the back and I open the door and my feet touch the ground, it's like, okay. It's a weird like settling, that happens for me. And so it's but I need travel and I need new environments to feel inspired and want to create. And so this is just somewhere that is familiar yet is a comfortable change of environment and is always something, again, it's always something new every time I'm here. There's always something different about it. So that kind of brought it to be that, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's just one of those things where having that break and being able to just sit back kind of allows it to flow through my mind, I guess, you know, because writing music, sometimes it's easier if I'm just writing like the lyrics, but if I'm working on like the music itself, then sometimes I have to sit there and it's hard for me to write with other people around.
Yeah. You got to find your own space, quiet and.
Yeah. And not even necessarily like that. It has to be quiet. It's just it feels like when you're writing a song or you're like something like that, it's almost like, it's like you're naked. It's like imagine it's like, if you're writing a song, it's like going to try on pants and you're in like the dressing room and somebody, you know, it's like, you don't want anybody to open that door while you're like trying to see if these pants fit.
Oh,
and
okay,
so, you know what I mean? So it's like that's like an anxiety or like an inhibition that I have where I'm like, I don't like to try to do it around other people, but it's just one of those, like, it feels like a personal process, unless it's like a group effort with the band, you know, that's like a different story. But even then it's like, I don't like when people come and like hang out when we're in rehearsals, like if they come to our practice space and just like hang out, it's not, and it'll be people that are like some very good friends of mine. Like I love them, but when they come to practice, it's just like, did anybody else feel like that was weird? And it was like, yeah, a little bit. And it's like, we don't know why, but it's just like, if somebody's there and we're like rehearsing. So it's like, sometimes there's going to be mistakes or we're going to try things and it may not always be the most perfect musical thing at those instances. And, you know, you don't want your friend to come see you practice with your band and be like, damn, they suck. You know, it's one of those, it's mildly that, but it's kind of funny. You know, that's the best way I can describe it. It's like you're trying on pants and you don't want anybody to come in while you're trying on pants, especially if you don't think they fit right now.
So are you writing lyrics for Quarks or are you writing lyrics just to write lyrics for the catalog?
So right now, actually what I'm doing is I'm working on a book. I'm working on like a work of nonfiction that's pretty detailed in regards to like, I've got like 1500 plus pages that I'm trying to read through research wise now to get even just started on this project. But it's one of those things that's going to take probably like 3 years, but it's just a passion. And I was like, this will be a good time to get started on this. And I'm going to work on some music too. I'm in the process of recording like my solo EP, with my drummer Thomas, actually, from Quarks. And he, I'm going to do like 5 or 6 of those songs, but trying to get some new stuff in the bank to like either put into Quarks or put into solo stuff, you know?
Oh, all right. That's my bad. I just thought you were coming down to do music. I didn't know you were avidly pursuing to write a book, a novel. That's pretty, that's pretty cool.
It's like all the, and like, that's the thing is, this is kind of like it, like I said, it's more nonfiction. So, but I do have all of the Quarks lyrics, all the characters that exist within them, it's like a fantasy universe is kind of like how I compartmentalize what I write for Quarks. And so there, cause with Quarks, it's like, there are voices that I use, I guess, in reference to like, I write lyrics from the point of view of a person or a character that exists within this like fantasy universe. And I have all these characters and there's like a fictional town in Oklahoma called Fry, Oklahoma, where everybody like lives and the majority of the people that exist within like the stories are here. But it's that's like a longer term pursuit of like, eventually I would like to write some sort of novel, but right now it's kind of weird. It's just like, I got drawn to this like strange anthropological study and was just like, I think there's like weird cross references of like the same symbolism used in like different types of like spiritual practices or world religions, even though they like never came in contact with each other beforehand. And so like kind of trying to find like the parallels and just like examine them. It's just nerd shit, but you know what I mean? But I just got interested in it and I was like, man, I want to write something like this. And that's what I'm good at. Words is what I'm good at. So why not use it in that manner too?
Oh yeah. I mean, multitasking for sure.
I don't know. I just don't like to stay. I don't like to stay bored.
Stay busy mind.
Yeah.
What they say, the idle hands are the devil's playground, if you believe in that type of thing.
Yeah. But exactly, it's like I gotta stay busy so I don't just go wild or just I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm gonna. It's one of those things too. Like, cause I have bipolar disorder, like being able to just like maintain a regular sleep pattern and like do things and kind of try to regiment myself like a little more, it does to an extent like help me stay like psychologically regulated. Yeah. So it's one of those things, you know, that helps too. It's like, if you just stay busy and then if you don't feel, if you're not always in like the most positive mind space, then even if you have to do something and it's like, cool, I got to go outside and do this thing, it's like that sunlight will help. And like making yourself sometimes do it is the hardest part. And then once you get there, it's like, oh, this is fine. Why was I fucking worried about this? You know?
Yeah. Just stressing about stuff. I can understand that in a lot of ways, because I can be like that sometimes, where I think going into a situation, or like when we went down to New Orleans recently for Hell Yes Fest, going down there, I was just so nervous about messing up, and I messed up right in the beginning because I said the Krampus cleanup, I was trying to give shout out to Chuck and them because they were in the audience. I said, well, this is a perfect time. And I was like, it's October and it was November at Hell Yes Fest and Krampus was in December. And but to push through the mistake and laugh about it afterwards is what's, you know, but that anxiety, that's a good question. Like doing live, we did two live events last year, D-Max Bar and Grill,
mm-hmm.
and then we did Hell Yes Fest.
Yeah, and y'all did that at the
Comedy House in New Orleans.
On Fulton, yeah.
Yeah, cobblestone
road. It's a cool little spot, though. It's like a cool little, you know, it's not like a huge club, but it's really, it's cool and it's intimate, and like, that's what cool comedy clubs are like to me, you know? They're smaller. Yeah. You look at like the famous comedy rooms and it's like the Cellar. It's like it maybe holds like, I think it's like 200 and something people, you know, max. And then it's like the same thing with like the Store. They have like the smaller rooms and then like a little bit bigger. But it's like comedy clubs are cool, man.
The anxiety, though, like, because I know music, y'all play a lot of different venues, a lot of different shows and stuff like that. And being that was our second live one, I had like butterflies and stuff going on. And we didn't really have no rituals. We just kind of set up and went with it, you know. Do you have, like, any rituals before a show to help calm that down?
I think one thing that I could – that I guess I could say is, like, my pre-show ritual is I do like to have a little bit of time beforehand just to kind of sit and just relax. It's normally show days, especially in the beginning, it would be, like, I go to work and I get off and then I go to soundcheck and then we soundcheck and then we hang out and we do things and try to interact with as many people as possible. And, you know, still trying to do that, but also realizing that I do need a little time for myself to kind of plan and formulate, but it's also different. Like I have my guitar is my anxiety blanket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's like the easy, like, cause I've done stand-up a few times, like going to go do stand-up comedy. And I revere people that are like good at stand-up comedy. I think it is the most difficult art form. Like it is, because the hardest part is it's just you and this microphone. And if you suck, it's the longest 11 minutes of your entire life. But if you do good, then it's like, oh, I'm on top of the world. It's like, I've had one good set and I've bombed absolutely terribly. So I'm 50-50 right now. And it was just like, I don't know if I'm going to do, if I'll keep doing it, but I do, I love, like, I don't know if you like stand-up, but
I love
that whole world. It's just, like, such an interesting, fun thing. And this is, like, how I was able to find a lot of it. You know, his podcasting brought me, like, all of the people that I listen to on a weekly basis at this point, you know?
Yeah, I like Dan Cummings' podcast. It's pretty good.
What's it called?
Time Suck.
Okay.
Yeah, he talks about, like, history and, like, different things. I mean, he gets into, like, some of the, like, the murders and the gruesomeness. I don't really dive into the, what's that genre?
Like the crime podcast or like the serial killer stuff.
Yeah, that it gets too detailed for me on some of that stuff.
It's yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't really want to hear about, I'm at work on a Tuesday about somebody getting dismembered and shit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's like, do you ever listen to Carlin?
No.
Hardcore History?
Uh-uh.
It's really good. He has, especially, like, I've kind of been in a little bit of a World War II phase and just learning about it, and he's really good. They're really long. It's like 4.5 hours, some of them, but they're very detailed, and he, out of all the history podcasts that I've listened to, is, like, good at maintaining it being animated so you don't just, like, fall asleep. Yeah, it's like with audiobooks, like, that's the... I can't listen to Carlin and go to sleep because he'll do a voice. All of a sudden, it'll be way louder than everything else, and you're like, oh, shit. Okay, all right, I'm awake. But with audiobooks, it's just...
They stormed the beaches of Normandy.
Yeah, yeah.
Gunfire rained down upon them as they took cover. You know?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what... I don't know why they assumed that monotone was the best way to go with every audiobook, but I'd like to create some form of petition that that alters this behavior.
Yeah, I'm definitely big shout out to Kobe. He's an audiobook connoisseur. He rather listen to someone read a book than read a book.
I think it's nice for, like, driving. It's like, instead of, because I've gotten to where I don't listen to as much music as I used to. It's one thing that I kind of want to try to change, but I love listening to audiobooks. And then, you know, there's... Have you ever heard of that app, Libby? Libby?
No.
So you can go... If you have a public library card, you basically install Libby on your phone, you put your library card number in, and then it gives you access to all of the books in ebook form, and if they have audiobook versions of them... available for free. So, like, you can it's great because it's like an Audible subscription. Now, granted, they don't have, like, everything, but there's a pretty good amount of stuff in there that you can go listen to, at least one of the books on, like, of, like, any subject that I'm trying to listen to. Like, I can either find a hard, like, an ebook copy or an audiobook copy. So it's nice in that because it doesn't cost you any money,
so,
and you can download it to your Kindle too,
so you just need to have a library card?
Yeah.
A library card, go to the public library, get a library card, download Libby, put the library card number in, and you get access to everything?
You got access to everything that's in their system.
Damn.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, because again, it's like, ebooks and buying books, it's not cheap.
Oh, no.
You know, it's not cheap, and then Audible subscriptions are like $15 a month, and you get one book. It's like, I've listened to 4 audiobooks in the last week.
Well, I need to do that for you. I need to do that for the kids. Kids been deep into reading books recently. It's because had to put the law down.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to make... I want to tell the listeners something out there. You want to break a teenage boy's heart, you just take that cell phone away, and you would be... magic happens afterwards.
Oh, dude, yeah.
My son went from an F in science. He has, in three weeks, he's already brought it up to a B. Because he wants that phone back.
Yeah,
like, it's magic, I guess. You take, I mean, us growing up, everything came from, like, books or, like, hey, this is what my dad or mom or uncle or cousin or, you know, my dad's friend said, and you would believe it. Or nowadays, kids can just go, what'd you say? Okay, let me look that up right quick. Well, Google says you're lying.
Yeah, and that is one of the benefits. And it's funny because, now it's like, if parents take a phone away, it's like a big deal. I remember when I, like, got in trouble in high school, and this was before smartphones were really a thing, or I think I was in junior high, like, or in eighth grade, I had, like, a flip phone. And I had a job. So I worked at a restaurant, like, right down the road from my house. But I remember I got in trouble, and my mom took my phone, and I was like, all right, you just won't be able to call me and know I'm at work, or if I've left school yet. That's at that point, it was like, that's the only thing I can do with this thing is, like, make phone calls and send text messages, maybe. Like, and that's it, you
that,
know? It's like,
well, that was the time when text messages, you had to pay for them too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or have, like, a bundled deal, free nights and weekends. Remember
Yeah, and you got the, you had the, like, like, it was like you could buy like 800 texts a month, and then it was the free nights and weekends, or then it was like, and then after that, it was like 3 cents a text or whatever, you know, like that. I remember that. And then remember before unlimited data was a thing, and you would always get the notifications and be like, if you're going to do this, then it's like $15 more on your phone bill. And it's like, I don't want that.
Yep. It's wild how far cell phones have advanced in the last 10, 15 years. It's crazy.
Oh, dude, just the telephone in general in like 100 years, you know. It's like, my mom lived in Iway when she was a kid, and she remembers having a party line where everybody on the block had the same phone number.
My dad's so then, told me about shit like that.
Yeah, you would pick it up and they would be like, oh no, I'm trying to call so and so, and you just wait until they picked up the phone and then just put it back down. Or you know, that's how you knew everything that was happening with your neighbors. You just got the T direct from the phone.
Rotary dial phones? I remember those too.
Oh yeah, yeah. My mom likes like antique stuff. So at one point we had like a few of those that were my great grandma's, but we never like used them because they were just like, you know, it's like at that point it is an antique. You don't want to mess it up, you know.
I think I'm old enough to, I think that one did work at my grandma's house when she was alive, one of those rotary phones. I do have a story. I remember my dad driving a blue hatchback Mustang, two doors, and he pulling up to, it ain't there no more. It's like a restaurant now, but it's by the softball fields, if you are familiar with the Oakdale area. But it was the old school gas station. He pulled up, and he got out and was talking on a payphone, like got out and talked payphone. This is back in the day where you rolled the windows down. My dad still believes that AC burns more gas. So the windows were down, so you could hear my dad talking on the payphone. He's like, you wouldn't believe gas. What was it? Gas is 50 cents a gallon, and a loaf of bread is 10 cents. I can't believe these prices are so high. And that's the only thing I really remember, but 50 cents a gallon.
Yeah. No, I mean, dude, remember? We didn't get quite that low, but we got close in 2020. I remember I bought gas at one point for $1 a gallon. During the pandemic, yeah. When everything shut down and, like, gas dropped to nothing, I was like, I remember because I wanted to go somewhere, and I was like, ooh, it's like $12 for me to fill up my entire car. This is pretty cool.
Oh, it didn't. I don't remember it getting that low. It did drop, but now it's skyrocketing back up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's almost backed up to $3 again. That's the thing. It's funny because I've noticed, because I drive back and forth to Baton Rouge to work at Elsie's 2 days a week right now. And it's funny. I think there's like a higher petroleum tax in New Orleans itself, because when I go, if I can wait to get gas, I always just go get it in Baton Rouge because it ends up being like 15, 20 cents cheaper for some reason. It's like the weirdest thing, but I guess there's like in New Orleans, there's some sort of like additional gas tax for like emissions or whatever. You know, they do that in larger cities. That's why California shit's like during the peaks, it'll be like $8 or, you know, seven something a gallon. It's just like, why?
I'll be walking somewhere investing in a bike. But when me and Cleve was down in New Orleans, one of the most handiest things now, since we're talking about technology, is Uber. Uber is convenient as hell, especially in a big city. You're like, I'm at random spot A, and they'd be like, be there in 5 minutes.
Yep, they just put, that's what I do on like the side too, because I go work in the kitchen, and then I like, if I don't have anything going on work-wise that day or like anything major to do, I'll just go drive Uber for like 4 or 5 hours. And you meet some characters. Like, don't get me wrong. You meet some very, especially driving in New Orleans, it's like, you're going to meet somebody interesting on every ride. And you're also going to have, at least once a week, have somebody hop in the car And oh man, it's the best. Just talking mad shit about something that is happening in their life. And it's great because you just, I'll have my AirPods in and I'll hear them and they're just going off on the phone with somebody, just spilling tea. And I'll just take that one AirPod out of my ear and just give myself a nice 10 minutes of like, oh man, my life really isn't that bad. All right, cool. Let's go.
So what's one of the craziest things that's ever happened to you while Ubering?
I had somebody throw up in my car, like right when I first started doing it. I've probably been doing it for like, I went to Peru, and when I went to Peru, I decided, I was like, I'm not going to work in a restaurant. Like, I don't want to work in the restaurant in the front of house ever again. And in New Orleans, and at that point, I was like, not really looking to like go back to Baton Rouge. I'm kind of doing this like because the owner of Elsie's is like my boy, and we're able to, and like he was like, yo, just come help me for like a month until we get a new kitchen manager. I was like, okay, cool. But I started in November, and probably like early December, I'm driving, and of course my car only holds four people. It's like passengers, like shotgun, and then three in the back. And then I pull up and it's like five or six people, and they just, I'm just kind of like, all right, fuck it, whatever, okay, let's go. And they get in the car. Sitting in the center is a woman, and she's sitting there, and we're driving, we're talking, the guy's sitting next to me, we're talking, and then all of a sudden I'm driving, I pick him up from the Roosevelt in the quarter, and I'm driving, and all of a sudden I like it smells like throw up. I was like, oh shit. And like, I didn't think about this until afterwards because they all had drinks. And, you know, there's no open container laws in New Orleans. So, like, as long as I'm sober, they can get in the car and have a drink. And it, like, I don't get arrested and there's no ticket. So, that's like the convenience of being in New Orleans with Ubering. So, they just got in the car. And then I felt like this little splash. And it was right before I started smelling the throw up. And I was like, oh, they probably just like, you know, we hit a bump. Okay, they just spilled their drink. All right, no big deal. You know, I was like, I don't care about that. And it starts smelling like throw up. And I go, did somebody throw up? And there was radio silence. And there was a piece of me that just knew. And I was like, oh, fuck. All right, here we go. And I looked in the rearview mirror. And I go, did somebody throw up? And you can see the woman sitting in the middle of the seat, just both hands over her face, just doing her best to hold this throw up in. And nobody still says anything. And then it just spews out between her fingers. And then the girl sitting next to her goes, yeah, you should probably pull over. And I was like, all right. So then I pulled over, and I'm going to be honest, we weren't in the safest area of town where we were at that point in our journey in New Orleans. And they were like, yeah, this is bad. This is fucked up, blah, 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 blah. And then the guy turns to me and goes, oh man, I'm really not supposed to be here right now. And just takes all of the money out of his wallet and just hands it to me. It was like $200. He just hands it to me. And then the chick in the back is the person that didn't throw up, is the person that called the Uber. And she was like, yeah, just go ahead and charge my card. And that's like, I get like $150 if somebody throws up in my car. So I told him, I was like, yo, like, just let her finish throwing up. She didn't throw up that much in my car. It was just like on me a little bit. And then like on the headrest of the driver's seat. And then I was like, yeah, I was like, look, this is not like the best place to be. Like if she just finishes throwing up, like I'll finish bringing y'all to where y'all are trying to go. And they were just like, no, it's gone too far. We're just going to call another Uber. It's like, all right, peace. Just dipped. And I was like, all right, I just made $350 off the one ride. Cool. I'm not doing this anymore tonight.
Yeah, I would shut it down too. That's wild that they have to have that in the sub clause, because that must happen frequently then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know people who have been like, I definitely had somebody get in my car that like had pooped their pants. Dude, but can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Oh, shit. Wrong button. Hold up. They did what? They shat themselves?
I've had a friend that also drives Uber. It wasn't me, but they got in the car and they were like, I cannot confirm because there was, like, I didn't physically see Brown, but, like, this dude definitely shit his pants before he got in my car. Because they were like, they told me, they're like, I had to roll the windows down. I was, like, beginning to gag. And it's like, yeah, that was, yeah, they definitely, but can you imagine just being, like, you're just a framer working on a job site, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, damn. That Kung Pao chicken that I ate for lunch just, like, went straight through me. And you just try to get to the Port-a-John in time, but there's five dudes waiting in it as well. And you just got, at that point, you know, you just got to unload, I feel like. You know, when's, question for you, when's the last time you pooped your pants?
Oh, wow.
We're bringing the intelligence to this episode.
Okay, the last time I pooped myself, oh, had to be when I was overseas. Had a mortar go off near me, and I'm pretty sure I shit myself.
Oh, that yeah, happened. That's reasonable, though. Mine's like, I just ate bad beef tips and then just couldn't make it home in time.
No, I did eat Pizza Hut here recently, about a year and a half ago, and I was this close. Like, I was in the process. I didn't, like, get it on, but I was in the process. Like, if I would have waited any, like, a 1 second, 2 seconds longer to get to the
get there.
Golden throne, it would have been the white throne, the castle, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was close. So, return the question, when's the last time you shit yourself?
All right, so I was working on a movie, and I was doing craft services. So I wasn't, I used to work in the catering department, but for this show, I was working in the craft services department, which is like,
I was about to ask, what is that?
It's the best. Everybody loves crafty. Okay. You're just the glory. Like, you are like, to an extent, and I did this position, so I will validate this statement. You are a glorified snack bitch. Like, you get, if somebody wants like ho-hos, you make sure that when the shopper goes, that they get ho-hos at Sam's for them. And, like, you just get everybody their favorite snacks, and then they all love you. With catering, you just make the food, and then they just bitch about it because it's not what they wanted to eat that day. So, like, nobody, and also catering was the only field that wasn't unionized. But anyway, I'm on this show. I'm working crafty. I eat beef tips with rice. All right? It's all I ate. I'm not gonna... you know, defame the catering company that did it, but it was not great. I got off early that day. So I was like, cool, because I was just extra. So I was like, cool, I'm going to go home. And all of a sudden, I'm on 90, and it hits me. And I'm like, ooh, I got to get home. Like, I got to get home, like, now. Bro, I ran 4 red lights doing my best to just, like, make it. And there's a little thing. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, because it sounds like the last time you shit your pants was, like, pretty valid. But, you know, as soon as I got to my house,
yeah,
like, that, oh, it's going to happen, just made it, like, 5 times worse. So then I'm struggling, and I have to go through a gate and my doorway. And then my bathroom is in the back of my house. So I am, like, doing my best. I'm running. I'm like fumbling through my fucking keys, trying to figure out what it is. And then I get in, dude, I make it to the throne. Okay. My fatal mistake was that morning I closed the lid. Let that be a lesson for all of you. Okay. Don't close the top lid. Don't do it. Cause I was like, yes, I'm going to make it. And I didn't realize the lid was closed. And I tried to start taking my pants off, and right, my ass cheeks had to be clenched so fucking tight so I wouldn't explode. And the moment that I got a big ass. So, like, I had to squat a little bit to get my pants off of my body. And the moment that tiny squat happened, it was just
over with.
An explosion. All right. And I live in a fourplex. It's 4 1-bedroom apartments in it. And the bathroom is where all of the apartments meet. So I shit all over the bathroom. Like, it is just like this unload. It would have, 75% of it would have gone in the toilet had the lid not been closed. So I was very frustrated. I was just like, God damn it, of course. And I scream the F word very, very loudly. Yeah, because
so
I am
they're in the
very,
process too?
No, just like after it happened, I just like as it unloaded, I just was like, fuck. Because I just didn't make it. I was just so sad. And then I can't believe I'm telling this story right now. And then I but it was funny because then it like a minute after I just like screamed so loud, I get a text in our group, in our like house group message where everybody, the tenants and the landlord are all in it. And they go, is everybody okay? I just heard somebody screaming. And I just go, yeah, I just fell. I wasn't going to admit to them that I just exploded all over the bathroom and I was very upset with myself. But then it's funny because then this wave of calmness came over me and I was just like, well,
I
just got to fucking clean this shit up now.
Oh, that's a... Well, that's definitely a impressive segue there for the listeners out there. Make sure you check out Third Coast Podcast on all major streaming platforms, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. Hit up our YouTube and 5000w.thirdcoastpodcast.com. And this is episode 221, sitting here with Mr. Alric. This is going good. It's nice to see you again.
Yeah,
I'm sorry it's been so long. Sorry, you know, you're going through some back worries and stuff. How was Peru? You brought up Peru. How was Peru?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's crazy to think because I left right after the last time I saw you. I came and I did the void and then I left right like 2 or 3 days right after that we flew out. And we were there, me and my girlfriend, we went there for like 3.5 weeks. I think it was like, right at 3 weeks, like 21 days. And can't recommend it enough. Lima was where we first flew into. It's the capital. It's like on the beach. It was a little, it was a little big for me.
Yeah.
Like in regard, and I'm not the best Spanish speaker either. And that's my ignorance. You know what I mean? Like that's my fault. I didn't prep enough. But Cusco was really cool. And that's closer to like Machu Picchu and it's a more Incan area and so it's funny because like we went to the jungle. We did 5 days in the Amazon.
Oh, all right.
And it's called Manu National Rainforest. It's 2.2 million hectares of land that encompasses the Amazon rainforest in Peru that's protected. And it was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. It was the most beautiful. I cannot wait to go back there. Like next time I go, I want to do 75% of my time in the jungle and then like a smaller portion of time in the cities. It's the amount of wildlife that you can see there. If you like nature and animals and stuff, it's like 300 different bird species that just live in that like tiny area of Manu. And like, I love hummingbirds.
Yeah.
And we went to this hummingbird sanctuary, 30 different hummingbird variants, like just all flying around in this one area. And you can just see, dude, have you ever heard of the walking palm?
No.
It is a palm tree that exists in the jungle and its root system is above ground. So it's got the main tree and then it's got all these branches
that go
down. Yeah,
I've seen those before.
It will move if it needs to move, it will kill certain branches off of its root system and then shift and add new root systems on the other side so it can get more sunlight. It literally is a tree that can move through the jungle.
Holy shit.
It's crazy.
I love new information. Dude, I didn't know there was a walking fucking tree.
Dude, it's crazy. And that's the thing. Because, you know, like the big thing when you go down there, people are like, oh, are you going to do ayahuasca? Are you going to do... And it's like, that's not like... Sure, if the timing were right and things were to happen that way...
Well,
sure.
What is that?
So it's like a form of plant medicine that's like used in like shamanic practices that contains like DMT and an MAOI. It's like this brew of like three different things that they boil and make this tea of. And it's like a very intense like psychedelic experience.
Huh.
And it's a lot of people, that's like the reason that they go down there. And that's not like... And again, it's not like the entire reason that people go down there. It's also a beautiful landscape and a beautiful place, but people want to experience plant medicine. And I'm interested in like medicinal plants, but that wasn't the purpose of my journey there at that point. And then also it's like, there's so much other stuff besides just like psychedelic compounds that exist in this jungle that people have been using for years and years to like cure their illnesses and whatever ills, you know, whatever hurts them, they can eat plants. Our guide through the jungle was like, I've taken pills to be like for sickness 2 times in my entire life. He's like almost 40. Like everything else, I just eat plants.
It is true. A lot. Big shout out to Annie Francisco. She was describing about how during one of the episodes that we done about like mushrooms and the different properties that mushrooms have that can like help change your without having to take like antidepressants and switch into certain types of mushrooms help her regulate better than the prescription drugs did. And that's cool. And it's like, does the pharmaceutical companies intend to hide that while you take their aspirin or whatever and you stay sick when nature's giving you stuff you need? But it's becoming more and more forgotten, I guess you would say.
I agree. And it's also, there's just, there's so many plants in the Amazon rainforest that just haven't been identified. You know what I mean? There's so many things, and there are things that these shaman know that it's like there's something called dragon's blood, and it's a tree, and when you cut it, its sap is this bright red, and they use it. What you can do is you can take it and you fill up a bottle cap with this sap, and you can swallow it and you drink it, and if you have stomach ulcers, it'll heal your stomach ulcers. They have this stuff, it's called the leche con leche, and it's a white sap. And they started using it because they realized that the small spider monkeys that are there, they're drinking all this gross water, but they would always drink the sap of this white tree, and it has antiparasitic properties. So when people get parasites in their stomach in South America, which is very common just because of the water.
Yeah, dysentery.
Yeah, they just drink this stuff, and it will, over the period of like a month, and it'll expel all the parasites out of your body. So it's like there are things that we just aren't using and or just like aren't available for us to sustainably harvest while still like respecting these people's, you know, like while respecting their land. You know what I mean? Because that's the thing, is part of like that form of like spirituality and growing this kind of stuff is for it to naturally all grow together.
Yeah.
And then that tells you what to put together. Like it's kind of one of those things. That's like part of what I'm reading about to work on this book. And it's just like there's so much like knowledge that we don't know because it's all passed down orally. Or it's like before during the Spanish Inquisitions, when the Spanish went and like took over the Aztec territories,
There
was like all they had like a large volume of written text that the Spanish just destroyed. So then it's like, oh, there's knowledge of all this stuff that we just like don't really know anything about now, because it's like they were just like, no, it's not in Spanish. Destroy it.
Hey, that's the first thing to oppress someone is destroy the history of someone else and make them forget it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the whole thing. It was, you know, part of the conquest to spread Catholicism through the rest of the world. And that was, you know, but it's just one of those things where it's like, damn, people were just ignorant and just couldn't be like, oh, they're different than us. Cool. Let's learn from them. They probably know different shit than we do. This is probably the best way to start exchanging information with people that we don't know once we can figure out the language barrier.
When you look a lot in the history, I always atone like the ideal of I'm just a smarter savage than you are is what you look at like history. It's like I'm just a little bit smarter and I'm going to take all your shit and do, you know, the Crusades, the Mongolian and China fighting each other. You look at Spanish, you look at shit, what the colonists did to the Indians too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Trail of Tears and Andrew Jackson and all that stuff. Dude, it was funny. It's funny that you bring up like Mongolia, because I was looking at it the other day. So 8% of the people that live in the area that was once the Mongolian Empire are all descendants of Genghis Khan. 8% of the population really? Has a direct line to Genghis Khan.
Well, he must have been making a lot of children back in the day.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of pillaging going on back then. I don't know if you, there was a lot of pillaging going on back then. So it wasn't necessarily like... It wasn't necessarily the nicest way, but it is crazy to think like that dude still holds like... I think it's like It's a smaller percentage of the global population, but it's like a pretty decent percentage of people all have like... are like descendants of him in some manner. It's wild.
Damn. Let me find out how Rick, you a super history buff. I would love to dive into it. We should do, the next time you come down, we should do a World War II episode and just all about World War II stuff.
Dude, I'd be down. Oh, dude, so I asked a few people this recently because it was the holiday. It was President's Day the other week. So who is your favorite president?
Who is my favorite president?
Yeah, who's your favorite president? If you had to pick an American president, and not obviously not based on like political or just like examine them as a character and be like, that was a cool motherfucker.
I would have to go with John F. Kennedy.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Kennedy's. Oh, that's like he's top three.
I go with Kennedy because Kennedy was trying to bring down the government giant and cost him his life.
Yeah, attempting to dismantle the CIA doesn't make the people that are in the CIA very happy.
Yeah, you know? When it takes some nuts to stand against oppression, and when you see, like, Martin Luther King, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He knew that the road that he was going down would eventually probably lead to that. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. I bet you John F. Kennedy knew it as the president, because I bet you he had advisors come to him going, hey, look, it ain't looking good. We got this, that, and the other, you know? And you know he had to know something, but to keep pressing, saying, you know what, I'm still going to try it, and I'm still going to try for change. That's why he's my number one.
It's a pretty dangerous job if you look at it percentage-wise. It's like 6 of the presidents have been shot. 4 of them died.
I wonder if I know Abraham Lincoln, John F. Kennedy,
or maybe it's only
that's 2 for sure. I know 2.
Yeah, off and top. Then and they tried to shoot Reagan.
Reagan,
and then they shot Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah,
that's why they call it, because they shot him and they shot him in the chest and he had a book in it that had a speech in it, and it shot him and it just didn't break his rib cage. It went into his pec. But it didn't kill him. And then he finished the fucking speech and goes, it's going to take more than one bullet to put a bull moose down. And it's just like, the man, dude.
I've never heard that story before.
Dude, Teddy Roosevelt was crazy. So he was born with all of his organs were smaller than his rib cage. So he was supposed to die in like his early teens.
Yeah.
But he stayed in bed. His dad made him stay in bed. And then once he was mobile, he was just like this crazy, energetic fucking thing. Are we close? What are we at?
We have 48.
Okay. All right. Well,
you know the time schedule.
Yeah. What are we trying to do?
Keep going. I want to hear this.
Okay. So I like Teddy Roosevelt. He's probably one of my favorite. He's top three, I feel like, because he was the first dude to ever be like, there is beautiful land in this world, and we should preserve it. He's the first person to ever do that, politically, ever. He created the national park system. He also loved to bare-knuckle box people. So, at one point, I can't remember the dude's name, but he was like the heavyweight champion. And they got into this, like, he was like, I'm president, so like, we should box. And it fucking blinded him in one of his eyes. Him and this championship boxer boxed, and he blinded him in one of his eyes, and he was blind in that eye for the rest of his presidency and the rest of his life.
Oh, really? Didn't he lead? Wasn't he around the pan? Was that the panhandle stuff going on back in the day too, with Teddy Roosevelt?
I don't know.
He fought in a war where he rode somewhere in South America. Where he rode horseback and
he like
stuff.
Navigated and like mapped out parts of the Amazon. That was like how he ended his life. He had like malaria at the end of his life and had lost like all of his weight and shit. It was like crazy.
when I went overseas, they made us take malaria pills. Did they advise, when you went to Peru, did they advise off of that?
I would guess at that point that there might not have been malaria pills.
Well, yeah, back way back then.
Like, with Teddy Roosevelt. That's what I'm saying. Like, during that period, probably wasn't any form of, like, I didn't have to take any. Are you talking?
I was asking you.
Oh, sorry. I didn't take anything, but we just brought, like, everything I had was, like, sealed. So, like, I would just wear a rain jacket and seal it up where it was, like, super tight around my wrist so nothing could get in. And then you just wore, really potent bug spray.
Ain't there
like
some
50% DEET or like 100% DEET? Just like spray it on the outside of your clothes, let it dry, and then just put it on. Because, dude, I mean, it's rough. It's the biggest mosquitoes I've ever seen in my life.
That's something to say when you coming from Louisiana.
Yeah,
that's impressive. That's a big old skeeter right there.
Yeah, crazy shit trying to fly in. You know, if they're attracted to light. So if you wear a headlamp, don't ever wear it on your head. Just like hold it to the side of you because they're always gonna fly. Like, I had quite a few things fly into my face and mouth in my time in Peru, and it was not satisfactory. I'll be honest.
I bet you.
Oh man.
So is it? When you go to Peru, is like the expense wise, is it an expensive trip?
No, it's really not. It's really not. It's because the conversion rate was pretty good when we went there. It was like one American dollar was like 4.5 of their dollars.
Yeah.
So everything went like 4 times as far. So it was nice. You know, we stayed in a very, like, not like a super fancy, but like a nice hotel for most of the time when we were in Cusco. And it was like $26 a day after conversion.
Damn.
You know what I mean? So it was really cheap to be there. And like, yeah, some of the stuff we did was a little more expensive, but it's like even 5 days in the jungle with like all of our meals included and like places to stay and all that. It was like 1,100 soles. So it was like $400.
Damn.
You know, like it wasn't as expensive as like, it's more expensive to travel in America, I feel like, than it is like out of the country, as long as you can get the flight there and you know, and like you go to certain places, like it's like South America, Southeast Asia, like Thailand, Malaysia,
the safe places. You don't want to end up like hostel.
Yeah. But also like I feel like I've stayed in sketchier places in America than I did that were like hostels in like foreign countries, honestly. And it's kind of funny, 'cause it's just like, it's all about just like having your head on. If it's like the same way when people are like, New Orleans must be dangerous. It's like, yeah, if you're dumb.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah exactly. Just have some common sense, pay attention, be aware, cognizant of your surroundings. And then also if you get a gut feeling, get out of there.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're like, I don't know how I feel about this. That should be the same thing anywhere. It's like my dad was nervous about me going to South America, and it was like, bro, I live in New Orleans. It's no difference. Like, it's no different.
New Orleans is definitely a monster of its own for our state.
Yeah.
And for all the listeners around the world, just know the whole state of Louisiana is not just one big bayou, and we're not all swamp people.
Oh, no. No. No, there's lots of everything, pretty much.
I did want to ask you something right quick. This is about your music, if that's all right.
Yeah, please.
What is it about your music that makes you feel so passionate?
I think it's that it's something greater than myself. And I don't always attribute what I do musically with me. If that makes any sense. Like, yeah. I think lyrically, there is a, I'm just like this channel for energy to like pass through and make something. And that's what it is. 'Cause a lot of times it's like, I have this story, I'll hear the music and then it's like, oh, this is the story that the music's trying to tell. It's not the story that I'm trying to tell. It's what the music is trying to tell. And I think that's what makes me get so excited about it, is I've been doing Quarks for almost 7 years, and I've seen it become
not just the idea of four individual people, but it is its own entity that is like living and breathing and has like its own biosphere. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things where it's like, it is not just me, and it's also not just Keegan and not just Johnny or Thomas. It's a little bit of all of us, but it's also its own thing. And I think that's something. And then also it's like an escape. Like it allows me to be able to just take a step back and be like, damn, all right, I don't have to think about my problems for the next like hour and a half. And that's what I want to do for other people too. So it's providing that as well. It's like, it's not like completely about servicing other people with it, but it is definitely an element of it. It's like when we're playing and I can see that people are having fun and I can see that they're enjoying themselves, it makes me know, cool, I'm giving what I look for in a concert to these people right now. Because that's what I look for. I look for something where I'm not even, my eyes aren't even open, and I'm just like catching a groove at a show. And when I get to see other people get that from what I do, it's like, oh, that feels good. Because I know they're getting that release that they need. And that's what we all need to be focusing on, is just kind of giving everybody a little bit of relief, you know, if we've got the time.
So, have you ever, speaking on that, have you ever been at a show and you're looking out at the audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, you can feel they're not getting down what you're putting down, you know what I'm saying?
Oh.
And how do you go about bringing that energy to a crowd that you feel like is might be trying to push you away and you're trying to grab them back?
I think we've realized in the 7 years that we've been doing this that it's either for you or you don't like it.
All right.
And that's okay. You know what I mean? That's perfectly okay. If you don't like it, the good thing is about a Quirk show is everything is so different. Every song is so different. So if you didn't like the last one, you might like the next one. And if you don't like that one, then you might like the one after that, because they're all different. It's like, this one's an R&B song, this one's a blast beat metal song, and then this one's just a good old blues. It's like, there's the variance of what we do kind of allows us to have like a more broad appeal. But it's like, if you don't like rock and roll, you're not going to like us. You know what I mean? And that's not to say that you won't. And like, I've definitely opened some people's eyes about like, oh, I've never really listened to this type of music, but I like what y'all do. And that's cool. But if it's not your bag, it's not your bag. And I'm not trying to like, at this point, the only thing I can do is just keep playing the set and play the best that I can. You know, it's like, if you don't like it, I'm sorry you paid money. But also, like, again, just keep listening. You might like something else. There's plenty of, everything we do is so different.
That's great. So, I love y'all's music. Y'all got, well, I have a playlist on the computer. And it's full of every artist of the week that we've had through the years and stuff.
Yeah.
And I catch myself every now and again, if I'm not playing my expensive, overpriced vinyl, which has become a vein in my existence, because now I just got to buy, it went from just getting vinyl, now I got to get custom vinyl,
special edition
vinyl. Yeah. I just paid $32 for a Rage Against the Machine vinyl, where it has the Buddhist monk that set himself on fire because to protest the laws they were putting against the Buddhist religion. It's on the album, so when you look at it, it's got the picture, but when it spins and plays the music, it's just something about it. It feels magical to me.
Yeah.
But, I forgot where I was going with that. I got talking about vinyl and shit. That's a whole... It changed. My brain went...
Oh, yeah. It's the nature of the cast. Nature of the cast, dude.
Speaking of podcasts, you need to shout out your podcast on Third Coast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I do, I'm trying to start getting back and putting some more episodes out, but I do a podcast called Big Al's Podcast Broadcast. And so I just feature, right now it's been mainly musicians, but trying to, once I like branch out to video, have more artists so they can have like their artwork up in the background and stuff like that. And just trying to kind of feel how they do the creative process, because I think it's unique that everybody does it differently. and everybody's approach is a little bit different. Yeah. And so it makes it, you also kind of understand a little bit where they come from. And for me, it's like, these are all my friends. These are all people that I've been friends with for years. And it's nice to have that little bit of time with them where we just sit down. It's like, it's funny. As soon as the microphones are on, nobody touches their cell phone. So it's like, yeah. It creates this great ability to have conversations and find things out about friends that you didn't know before, you know?
Exactly. And all the cool different people that needs their voice to be heard, because sometimes that's the great, I always love about Third Coast is like everybody has a voice. Everybody can come talk. It doesn't matter if you're a psych nurse or you're a MMA fighter or you're making films or you're my buddies, you know, or just it's everybody has a voice. And that's the cool thing about podcasts. And I like about your podcast is like you have a great intro in the beginning. You know, you let the listeners know what's going on with your show, which I like and inspire to. And that's great.
Yeah.
Because that takes work and effort. And then you have some people that help you with sponsorships too with Riverboat Coffee, right?
Yeah. Brady, he was just like, I'll give you coffee if you do that. I'll give you a cup of coffee if you put me on the podcast. And I was like, I'll do it for free. I love you. And your business it's the best coffee in New Orleans if you want cold brew. So it's just like, yeah, I'll do it. I love you guys. I love you. And like my buddy, it was cool to be able to get the promo code with Treeline. Cause just being able to have that. And like, that's one of my homies that runs this company out in Denver. So being able to have that too was cool, you know?
So when you come to when you do your recordings, get a little bit into you run. How do you record? You record on a P4, or do you record? How do you record your show?
Oh, my show. So I go. I have a Scarlett and interface, and then I record direct from the interface. I plug it into my MacBook, and then I go direct into Ableton.
Okay.
So I'm able, but because I make music, I'm able to be like, oh, I can just use the audio software that I already have.
Yeah.
And it's nice. And I have microphones. So it was like one of those things where I like podcasting. I wanted to start doing it just as a way to promote my friends that do cool things. And then it was like, oh, well, I already know how to mix and edit this. So cool. I can just do it, you know? And my brother is like a big part of it now. He does the editing. He's really good. He's actually in film school, and is a shout out to my brother, Kalen, right now. He's like working on he got a script written and has this production company that wants to like help him make it and stuff. So it's pretty cool to see like everybody starting to, I don't know, as you get older, you probably see it too. Everybody starts coming into their own, and it's like, oh.
That like I was telling you earlier, a big shout out to Zane. Zane had helped the show a lot, and he was doing a lot of the mixes there for a while. We would send it to him. He would break it down, tear it apart, put it all back together, and send it back. But he had got, we had did an interview with Mitch, and then he got tied up with Mitch and did the audio for Mitch's new movie, Sea of Madness.
Oh, nice.
And he was like, he came to us and he was like, hey, look, I just got too much going on, but I'm going to help you while you don't have to worry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, it's a lot of information, but I just ate it up and, it's helped us to now, and like that what you said, it's so cool seeing someone you know or family or friends just elevate into something great.
Yeah.
In their art or in their job or just in their life.
Yeah, whatever they want to do, and just aiming to be, that's the thing. We all should aim and hope for all of our friends and the people that we love to be happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that's like when you get to see it come to fruition, you're like, ah, yes, all right, cool, yes. It's like, it's one of those, I always joke about it, but it's like, if you can't come up if the team doesn't come up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like everybody kind of has to help everybody out to create that rise, to like build it, you know? It's something special.
And two is when you see someone come up and their life has changed and you're not as part of it as much, just know that you're still there. But you got to let people grow into their own selves too sometimes.
Oh, definitely. And it just sometimes it's like you see that and they're doing what they're doing. It's like it takes a lot of work too.
Yeah.
And people are busy. So it's not always like, you know, I see my buddy, one of my buddies in particular, has done very well like growing this business and doing it. And we don't talk as much, but it's like it doesn't matter. Yeah. When we talk on the phone, it's like nothing ever happens. So who cares? You know, it's like, yeah, we don't get to talk except for every like 2 months, but whatever, you're doing your thing and I'm happy to see you like coming up. And if we get to talk, great. If not, I'll see you when I see you, you know?
And you're just like me and probably just like most, you know, middle-aged people, busy as hell always.
Yeah, it never stops. You never feel like it's enough, you know? So.
Well, we're going to have to end this, Alric.
Let's do it.
So for our Artist of the Week for episode 221, who better to give the Artist of the Week than Alric from Quarks?
Yeah.
So give us give the listeners a little bit of information about Quarks, who y'all are, and
okay. So we're Quarks. We're based in New Orleans. We've been playing. We all started as students at LSU. We all come from a various musical background and various interests in regards to like what we listen to music wise, and so it makes it something. We play all original music pretty much. You know, we might throw a cover in there every once in a while, but it's original music, and it's about it just doesn't sound like anything else, and that's one of the biggest compliments that we've gotten over the years is y'all just sound like y'all. It doesn't sound derivative, but I like to say that it's a vintage sound for the modern era, so it sounds familiar but it's new, you know what I mean? And we're just rock and roll at the heart of it. We're just rock and roll, and that's what it is. And it's a hell of a live show, I'll tell you that. I'm going to sell myself on this one.
It really is. I've been there. I've seen it.
We're going to be at Moonshadow Festival in Abita Springs on March 15th. And then we're going to be at the Broadside Theater with Zeta and Deltaphonic on the 22nd. And then I'm going to be doing a solo show at Carrollton Station. I don't think it's announced yet, but it's all right. I'm going to be doing on the 23rd at Carrollton Station. I'll be doing like a half hour solo set. So doing like my country songs, basically.
All right. Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's us. That's what we're doing. That's what we got on the docket.
All right. Make sure y'all stay tuned to the end of the episode and check out some Quarks music. Let's dive into some words of wisdom. Would you like me to go first, Alric?
Yes, please.
My words of wisdom is to spend all your money on cocaine. No, I'm playing. Take time to enjoy the little things and make time in the morning. I'm getting a little bit older, but I make sure to take 10 minutes every morning to just stand in about 5 minutes to just stand, look outside, breathe some fresh air, and be like, today's going to be a good day. No matter what, I don't care if the impending strike of an asteroid that they told us wasn't going to hit the Earth is going to hit in 2 hours and it's going to kill everything. Every morning I wake up, I said, today's going to be a good day. And I just put that in my mind, like, and I just move forward. And if it turns out to be a bad day, at least tomorrow might be a good day.
Yeah. And the mindset really does have an effect. Yes. You know what I mean? That your mindset of like, today will be good. Because I'm grumpy in the morning sometimes, so I fight with that, but there's something that I do kind of similar. I just sit there and, like, breathe. I just take the biggest, deepest breaths I can take for, like, 10 minutes. And then I'm like, all right, cool, feel a little regulated, let's go.
I am a grumpy motherfucker. Someone, like, if I get woken in my first 4 hours of sleep is my best sleep. If I get woken up in the first 4 hours, I am the maddest person in the world. But usually in the morning, I find myself to be the like crankiest, I guess you would say, and I can be quick to get angry. So I always make time before I do anything. I get up, you know, early. Like if we have to go somewhere at 6:20, I'm up at 6 o'clock. So I get that time to, it's going to be all right. Just breathe.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a good day.
Yeah. I guess words of wisdom for me would be, don't be afraid to schedule time for yourself. And if you need that time, obviously don't cancel the obligations that you have at that moment, but don't be afraid to be like, all right, well, I'm going to schedule these days for me to just spend time doing what I want to do. Or, you know, even if that doing what you want to do is doing nothing, schedule that time for yourself, because You know, everybody, it's hard out here right now, and everybody needs a break. And if you've got the time and you have the ability to give yourself a day and you get to go do something that you want to do, it's going to make that next period of having to work 10 days straight a little bit better. You know what I mean? It's not always, every day's not, like you said, every day's not going to be perfect, but that's what you got to, you know. You gotta move forward, and you gotta, the attitude and the mindset of it is all of it. And I think taking time for yourself is one way to be able to take a look in the rear view and be like, okay, I've accomplished these things. Also, don't be afraid to recognize what you've done for yourself in the time if you're in a period of growth. Don't be afraid to look back for just a second. Don't reflect forever, but look for a second and be like, oh, I've made progress in this. I've made headway in whatever goals you're trying to achieve. You know, I think that's important.
Yeah, it's great words of wisdom, Alric.
Well, thanks, man.
And thank you so much for, I know that you had other things going on and other plans, but I appreciate you stopping by and being a part of the show.
Oh, dude, happy to do it. Anytime I'm out here or anytime you're in New Orleans, please let me know. I'd love to do this again. It's great doing it, you know?
Yeah, me and Chuck are in talks about trying to get something going for like 250, maybe two, at the rate we're going, because we've been interviewing so many people, maybe 230, 235, but I'm in the process of learning to get a board while this can be put out while we have an audience, you know.
Oh, nice. And hell do it, yeah. Just do it live.
Yeah, do it live, but we do it live. Like, we do it. Hell, we don't, yeah. We don't need nobody else. We set everything up and like maybe have like two bands play, then do the podcast, and then maybe have some band members come on, and then two more bands afterwards.
Hell yeah, that'd be great,
man. So it's like,
man,
music, podcast, then music.
Yeah, that'd be sick,
something,
dude,
like that in the future, but everything's a work in progress. But we got to go. Alric, right.
Thank y'all so much. Appreciate you.
YouTube out there. And I'm Joe from Third Coast Podcast. What it do, Gators? And we out.